When a government can confiscate the earnings of the people with no restraint or no limit whatsoever on the amount that government takes, then government has become the master.
Didn't you say that all services were worth at least $5.15, and here there is a service that's being rendered to you personally, which you are not compensating at all?
No, I said to you earlier, I said to you, unless someone decides that they want to volunteer.
During the election, all this enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders was taking place while people in Venezuela, under a socialist government, were starving. They were breaking into grocery stores desperate to get food.
For regulation.
Regulations.
Some regulations.
Regulation. Regulation.
What do you think is should be the proper income tax rate?
Well, the best would be zero.
All right, everybody. We are live. Tonight we're talking about social media with one of the best, most prolific social media uploaders I currently know, and what I mean by that is, like, you're prolific in that, like, you post all the time,
right.
Which is good, which is great. So,
well, I'll tell you what, when you asked me to do this, my plans were I was just gonna sit online and rage tweet all night, so I just said, yeah, sure.
well. Hopefully this is a lot better than rage tweeting. Although I mean, who doesn't enjoy a good rage? Who doesn't enjoy a good rage tweet every now and then?
Oh man.
So AD man, I saw you. I think, how long have you been doing, like, YouTubing right now? Like, how long's it been?
Like 3 years, I think, at this point.
I remember when I first saw you doing it, and, like, I think I sent you a message that was like, "Dude, keep it up, man, because your stuff is really good," and you have. You have, and you've built a very vocal following, which is great.
Yeah, no, it's been really good. It's been a lot of fun, and I appreciated that message. It definitely, in the beginning, wasn't really doing much, and you know, eventually, if you don't do much, you stop. So I never stopped because of a lot of that encouragement.
I think what's interesting too is that you started this 3 years ago, and you've been saying stuff that. You had an interesting position in that you were at first you were warning about what this would lead to, and now you're at a position where you absolutely see exactly all your predictions were true. Like when we talk about social justice or critical race theory and all this stuff, like at first it was well, this is just a ploy to vote for liberals. And then they're like, no, it's not. This isn't about being liberal or politics at all. And now we see that it absolutely is about politics. But you've just been seeing how you post all the time has just inspired me just to create making content. And and I think what we're starting to see is not just with you. I think if you look at, like, Cross Politic, Fight Laugh Feast Network, what Apologia has done, James White's, I mean, he's been live streaming, I think, probably before any of us, really. We see that there's this online community that's very vocal, and I think we're getting at a point of where we're starting to create enough chatter that people who want to acknowledge that we don't exist are starting to have to at least respond to us, even if they don't want to drop our name or platform us. And I think it's causing a lot of tension. Because in a way, social media has allowed us to dictate the conversations of the Gospel Coalition or all these other things, or other liberal organizations. And all we're doing is sitting in our rooms. Like, me and you are both in our room right now.
That's right.
And we're broadcasting to people. We're taking questions from people. Which, by the way, we are going to do. So we're going to take questions from the YouTube chat. If you go to youtube.com/comrades media, you can see if it's there. I imagine people are already watching on Facebook right now. But I try to only keep the questions to one chat because it just works that way better. And if you pay me a super chat, it guarantees your question will be asked no matter how stupid it is. So which is great.
It is great.
So AD, I want to talk about some of the articles the Gospel Coalition's been putting out recently. Because I read it, and I think like on its own, it's a good article, mm-hmm. but in a sense of like that. So the, well, let's just pull up. We'll pull up the article right now. So the article right now, you can see, it's the title of it is Seven Questions to Ask Evaluating Online Pundits. This was the one that you did, and I saw it and like lost my mind on it too.
Yeah.
Because one, they're good questions to ask in evaluating online pundits. They're but not just online pundits, just anybody in general.
Yes.
Who's voicing their opinion on anything. But you saw this and I did too. Why don't you explain to me why it why this article like concern or didn't concern you but really piqued your interest?
Yeah, it definitely piqued my interest. I wouldn't say it concerns me because I think this is a very losing strategy from from Big Eva. But yeah, you're right. These aren't bad questions. You know, let's just take the first one for example. Kevin DeYoung says the question that you should ask is, does this person inhabit a healthy web of family and friends? That's a great question, because if somebody's just like toxic and all their family hates them and there's always conflict with their friends and their family, like obviously that's an unstable person. And the Bible's very clear, you shouldn't like pay them any mind, you know, unstable people. But this is such an obvious question. There's got to be a reason why he feels the need to put this out there. And I suspect that really what's happening here is he's trying to rig the game in such a way that you think that these people that you're familiar with their names, you know Kevin DeYoung, you've maybe read a book of his, you've definitely seen other people that you know recommend him, and so you've got this illusion of knowing his web of family and friends, but really you don't know anything about Kevin DeYoung. He could be horrible behind the scenes, you don't know. I'm not saying he is, but the point is that he's trying to have like this uneven playing field, and every one of these questions really is demonstrating that. And the idea behind these questions is to sort of cast suspicion on newcomers, because you have this illusion that you know Kevin DeYoung, you know these guys in Big Eva, but 80 Robles on YouTube, like he could be a crazy person, nobody knows.
Right.
And that was my thing with it, because these aren't bad questions, but they're almost like kind of irrelevant to most people. You don't know these people very well, but there's an illusion that you do.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's with Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or
sure.
or anyone at the Gospel Coalition, anybody on Twitter. These are good questions. But I think me and you both saw that they're trying to push it's bigger than just whether or not you should evaluate these people based on these seven standards, but they're trying to discredit the media.
Yes.
So which I think is the major concern of this. And I think what
Let me I'm, stop you. Can I stop
okay,
real quick?
Yeah,
I'm
go
so
ahead.
Sorry, dude. But you're absolutely right, because all of these questions are not really questions of how you evaluate an internet pundit. They're really a question of how you evaluate anybody. So you could write this article about Big Eva. So how do you evaluate a celebrity pastor? Well, all of these questions would apply. But there's definitely there's a rigged game a little bit, because you have the impression that, well, hey, if Don Carson recommends Kevin DeYoung's book, well, that's some legitimacy there. And the reality is we know that this has not worked in Big Eva. I mean, there's so many examples. I don't want to bring anyone's name into it, but of these leaders, you know, that it turns out that their life in behind the scenes was a train wreck, and it comes out and it brings disrepute on the church. It's not a good thing. But the reality is that these questions, yeah, they're great questions, but he's really trying to make this apply to pundits online, not so much Big Eva, even though they equally apply and you equally don't have the information that you supposedly need to evaluate these people.
Right. And so the thing that I get, I mean, because this isn't the first social media post that the Gospel Coalition has posted up. I think I sent you a link before. And it was from 2011, back when social media was just getting started. And that post was talking about how great social media was, right? And then, but now it seems like everything that the Gospel Coalition is doing has a real negative spin on. Like, people are mean on social media. People aren't experts and they're voicing their opinions and they have large platforms and they don't have college degrees. They haven't written books like that. Like all these sort of, like, these are the things like that's the thing that was so interesting to me is like on this one, specifically it asks about, does a person have full-time responsibilities beyond independent punditry? And the question I would ask about that is, well, what if your full-time responsibility is independent punditry?
Right.
Like, would anybody say, well, really, what's Glenn Beck's full-time responsibilities besides being a pundit?
Right. Absolutely. Right?
Like, why? Like, Stephen King's full-time responsibility besides writing books? Like, you know, there seems to be this disconnect here.
Yes.
That online punditry is a legitimate career choice.
Oh, absolutely. I saw it. So it was so interesting that the way you're putting this is so perfect. Let me just see an article. Yeah,
while you're pulling that up, I'll mention like someone like Ninja. Ninja, they don't know the numbers, but it's rumored to be $100 million deal to stop streaming on Twitch and move to Microsoft's platform Mixer. That's $100 million dollars.
Yeah.
And all he does is play video games all day, right? And so that's not obviously all he does.
Right.
But that would be the appearance. There's a lot more to running an online streaming than just, you know, being in front of the camera all the time. But the mentality is, just a few years ago, people were saying there's just people that sit in their basement and play video games all day, and that's not like a valid career choice. It totally is.
So when I was, you know how like there's a section of Gospel Coalition that recommends other articles for you?
Yes.
So on this article, as I'm reading the Kevin DeYoung article, I see another article written by another Gospel Coalition guy about why he chooses to write. And one of the things that he says is, he says, you know, I'm always, you know, interested when people ask me why I choose to write. And like the first answer was, well, it's my job. I write books for a living. And I'm like, it's so interesting because like that is a legitimate answer to that question. I'm not saying it isn't.
Yeah, it
absolutely
is.
But for some reason, there is a disconnect here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is why I know this article was written under a little bit of duress, because every single time Kevin writes something that's a legitimate question, sort of, he actually knows that that there's inconsistency there. Because he even says, look, he says, does this person have responsibilities beyond internet punditry? Again, there are exceptions. Tim Chalice, for example, has proven to be one of the most trustworthy voices on the internet. And all he is an internet pundit. And it's like, you see what I mean? Like, there's some duress here. There's a certain kind of internet pundit that he has in mind. It's not really just the internet pundit. He's trying to stop, I think, some bleeding, personally.
Yeah, I'm getting some notes that are, the volume's kind of low, so I'm just going to try to fix that real quick.
Yeah, no problem. Let me say some more things, because here's the thing.
No one can
hear
you.
Here's the thing.
No, I'm just kidding. They can hear you. It's just
No. So, but you're absolutely right. Like, I think on my video, I even said this. I said, you know, obviously, I'm not at the point now where I make a full-time living off of YouTube. And at the beginning, when I started, I wasn't even intending to. I had no idea that I just was going to do it for free, essentially. But let's just say I have a video go viral and all of a sudden I am able to have a living on YouTube. Like, why is this why is that somehow suspect? I just don't understand. I mean, some people write books, some people do videos. I don't know. I mean, it certainly seems to me that there's an unspoken argument being made here. And I think it's under duress because I think that personally that Kevin DeYoung is probably had a thorn in his side a little bit when it's Gospel Coalition in particular with some of us yokels online.
Right. And so like when I, you know, we talk about like, let's say like Ninja, for example, getting $100 million deal, those are athletic level.
Huge
trades. Right. So, I mean, nobody would say, well, man, LeBron James doesn't have a real job. He just plays basketball all day.
What responsibilities does he have besides playing basketball?
Yeah, right. Exactly. But here you have a guy who just made $100 million deal.
Yeah.
It's a homeschooled kid.
Yeah.
They got in a lot of trouble, by the way, because he said he didn't want to stream and play video games with other girls because he doesn't want to make his girlfriend feel bad for spending time with other women alone. And he got in a lot of trouble for that. But anyway, yeah. Doesn't matter because he got $100 million.
right.
But I, when I see this stuff, I'm reminded of how the Gospel Coalition has fought really hard to be a gatekeeper.
Yes.
They've been the ones that determine if your book can get placed on Lifeway, right, mm-hmm. on the bookshelves. They determine if you get a platform at one of their conferences or one of their stages. They get to determine all those things. And suddenly, by the grace of God, that sort of platforming or that protection, that sort of gatekeeping is unnecessary for them.
Right.
Because now anybody can set up in their room and do commentary troll libs on Twitter or do whatever. They can do whatever, and they can make a living off of it from their home. And it's interesting, too, because on our way to San Diego this week, we listened to C.R. Wiley's The War on the Household. I forget the title of it, but it's by C.R. Wiley. But one of the things he talks about is making productive property. Instead of going away and working at a job with a corporation and leaving the father out of the home from 9 to 5, the Bible doesn't really have that sort of landscape in view, in the sense that back then most people worked, when they worked full time, they would work within the boundaries of their home. They wouldn't go off somewhere for a long time. And then there were exceptions to that back then. But for the most part, a blacksmith would work in a shed in his backyard. He would teach his child as he was training him to do the work and stuff like that. And nowadays, we just say, well, go to your 9 to 5 and then come back 6 or 7 hours, eight hours later. And then you can be home with your family for a few hours a night. But he was talking about the value of making productive property. And one of the things that social media allows us to do is it allows us to make a living, make an income by working at home. Mm-hmm. You know, I've worked for clients that would spend $1 million a month on advertising mm-hmm. on Facebook, and I could do everything from home. Mm-hmm. I never had to leave. So there's all these opportunities there to do this from home, to strengthen your family, strengthen your household. And for the Gospel Coalition, it's a threat to them, because now anybody can gain a following without their stamp of approval. Anybody yes. can gain a following without having their book publishing deal. And what's so interesting about that is they're complaining about yes. the internet. But they're still significantly involved in the printing industry, in terms of book publishing deals and stuff like that. And they've had to move to, you know, audiobooks and Kindle. And then Lifeway has gone out of business, right? They don't have storefronts anymore. And so we see essentially their industry crumbling. And instead of just embracing that and moving mm-hmm. to like a new media platform, it says, well, hey, how can we live stream? Like, how can we take advantage of that? How can we engage in the way the internet forces people to engage? How can we interact with anybody who would ask us a question? And they've created this system and this wall and this structure that doesn't allow people to be able to do that. And now people are only listening to people that let them do that. Like even someone like Doug Wilson, for example, who's not the most reachable person, but he still occasionally responds to trolls on Twitter.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's still an interaction there. And if you ask him a question on Twitter, there's a chance he'll respond. But a lot of these guys have no interaction with the common folk. And I think that is mainly really what's hurting them the most, because people don't see them as relatable. They don't see them as being in touch. They're unable to offer up suggestions and questions. And I'm not saying that anybody who's a celebrity has to respond to everybody that talks to them or even addresses them. But there seems to be, for sure, like, for example, like right now, like I have the super chat. I have the super chat up, right? Anybody can ask us a question. Anybody can talk to us. We can interact. We'll stop the show because people are saying your volume's too low, AD, or something like that. And so those are all things that we can deal with. It's not polished. It's not perfect. The production isn't scripted. Right. We didn't address like our question. I sent you the articles that I for some review. But there's no script for tonight's show.
Right.
That's what people like now. Like, people like the, oh man, like they're going to go live. They might say something that they might regret. They might have to repent afterwards. You know, there could be trolls in the chat that get involved and like start harassing them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
and so those are all things that people like to watch, but those are all positions that the Gospel Coalition has kept themselves from.
These are the things, though, that are destroying democracy, though, and they're they're leading to unchristlike communication.
Right, right. Well, I mean, we see this is why my question would be for, and I haven't heard them speak on this, but I would like to ask the head guys at the Gospel Coalition, like, what are your thoughts on let's say Reddit shutting down the Donald this week, right? So you had the Donald, it was placed in quarantine, and then the Donald, they removed moderators and put in Reddit approved moderators in the Donald thread, essentially shutting down. When that happened, the moderators said, well, we're not going to let anybody post because we don't want this to be misinformation or government propaganda. So they essentially shut down the Donald. Like, what would my position is that, what would the Gospel Coalition think about that sort of election interfering with, what do you think they would,
if you told me, Marcus, that I had to pick an option and I had to bet every dollar I owned on this option, and here's what it is: that the Gospel Coalition or people associated with them have been in talks with, you know, big tech organizations about being sort of like a Snopes of evangelicalism. And you said, has that happened or has that even been thought of in the Gospel Coalition? Yes or no? You have to bet your life savings on it right now. You have to. I would say yes. I think that they love that kind of stuff. They would love to be that. Now, that's completely speculation. I have no evidence, no inside information, nothing. But I think that the essential posture of the organization of Gospel Coalition, they would love to be the official gatekeepers. And if they could figure out a way to do it and not, you know, have idiots like me gain like probably 2,000 followers overnight, they would probably do it. Right. You know what I mean? That's what I think. But that's just, again, speculation. Complete speculation.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we see that, like, enter, like, that was like what the seminaries were supposed to do. They were supposed to be this barrier that says if you haven't gone to one of our approved seminaries, you can't really have a voice, you can't really have a say on things. And so they instituted the seminaries, but then again, the internet comes and people learn and read on their own, and they're able to educate themselves on their own under the authority of a pastor and stuff. And now you have an issue where people are even questioning, why would I go to a seminary when I could just, you know, be under the mentorship of my pastor for 3 years?
Absolutely. And that's a good question.
Yeah. It's a completely valid question. So their entire system, their entire framework is essentially collapsing on themselves. And there was a graphic, I sent it to you on Twitter. I'll read it. I don't have it pulled up to show, but I wanted to, because I thought it was interesting, as a lot of people know that Rhett and Link did this deconstruction. They did this deconstruction sort of thing, and they wrote an article on it. And the title of it says, "Let's Deconstruct a Deconversion Story, The Case of Rhett & Link." But the sub-headline there is, "We live in a day when two YouTube comedians and just 3 hours of video can persuade Christians to rethink their faith." And like, the reason I laugh at that, the reason I laugh at that so much is, first off, one, Rhett and Link aren't just two YouTube comedians. They run one of the largest production companies for pretty much YouTube in general. They don't just do their show. They produce content for a lot of other channels. And they are the modern day success story of YouTube, and they have tremendous power when it comes to YouTube, which is why I always thought it was interesting that when people were complaining that Christians were being banned or whatever, that they were always silent on it. And then it came out that they said that we don't speak on our faith anymore. And now it's that they're agnostic and atheist too. And, you know, and their families as well, apparently, which is really, really sad story
in general. Totally.
But when you sit there and say, just YouTube comedians can persuade Christians to rethink their faith. Like, it's like, of course. What do you think? Like, people on YouTube get more ratings and more viewership than broadcast television.
Right. Yeah, and there's just some disdain in that, and the way that they frame that, and it's almost like this is illegitimate. Because it's not official. And it's just this idea, like even in one of the other articles he sent me, maybe we'll get to it, but it was talking about the retweet button and how it's really bad for democracy because just a random person can have their opinion retweeted and stay at the top of the algorithm. And it's like, you can just hear the disdain, like, you're not initiated. You're not in the guild. You don't get to be at the top of the algorithm.
Yes.
And they hate that. They hate that.
Right. There was another article, too. It was about, let me see. I sent this to you. I'm going to pull this one up because I think this one's important. Because the reason is because it's just not true on its face. It's just not true. But also, more importantly, so what?
That's often what I feel like when I read this stuff.
So this is called "No Social Media Algorithm Rewards Grace."
Yes.
And the reason I find this so interesting is because it's not true. First off, it's not true. The reason is because you have websites like GoFundMe.
Sure.
Right. So you have websites like GoFundMe. Also, you have YouTube content creators like Mr. Beast, who's one of the number one YouTube content creators at the moment right now. Right. He's maybe heading toward. He's at least, I think he's at like 15 million subscribers, maybe more. And he got a start when a sponsor came to him and said, "Hey, we're going to give you, $50,000 to make a video." And he goes, $50,000 to make a video? What am I going to do with that much money? Why don't I make a video of me giving this $50,000 out to homeless people?
Yeah.
And that was how Mr. Beast got started. He would take insane amounts of money and give it to people. So, and he got tons of views from that. And he's tremendously successful, and a lot of his content is stupid and dumb and silly, but a lot of his content too, like one of his videos I saw, he bought a homeless person a house. Right. And so he's just capitalized on this idea that let me see how much money I can give away in a YouTube video and still make a profit and see and if that gets views. And it does. And he's figured it out. Mm-hmm. And so when I see a headline from the Gospel Coalition that says "No social media algorithm rewards grace," I'm like, well, that's just not true.
They don't get it.
Yeah. Right. But also, it doesn't matter because, for example, on Facebook, I'm going to share, for example, on my Facebook, I share stuff about, me and my wife and our anniversary, and we went to San Diego. Here's pictures of family, that sort of thing, right? Which isn't really about grace, really. It's just, this is my more personal life. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm thinking about today. But Twitter has created a platform for itself that's really just about fighting.
Yeah, yeah, that's
that,
true.
that's really what Twitter's become. And you said, well, no, so, well, Twitter doesn't reward grace, but I don't think it's for that. I think Twitter is great for debate. And I know a lot of people would disagree with me on that, but I can explain that. Twitter is great for debate, and it's great for exposing the wickedness of people.
Sure, sure.
And so, you know, a lot of people say, well, you can't have in-depth theological debates of 240 characters. And my response to that is, well, you can if you're wrong. because it's very, very possible to have very complex debates in a very limited amount of space that Twitter gives you. I've done it before for a long time. And it's always the people who can't answer questions that always resort to, well, Twitter's just not the place for this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
of course, right. Twitter's of just course. Not, this is just isn't the right outlet. You know, I need all the, you know, but if you're arguing presuppositionally, Twitter is perfect.
I'll tell you what. So yes, and let me say this. I think that, and it depends. You have to have a deeply biblical view of grace. I think some of this kind of rage tweeting, exposing the darkness, actually is a grace in and of itself. In some instances, I was going to say on YouTube. You know, I've talked about this a couple of times, and I think you and I have talked about this before. But I used to watch a lot of To Catch a Predator clips.
Dude, and Chris Hansen is back, though.
I know he's back. I know. A little bit. He's questionable nowadays, but he kind of doesn't get social media either, speaking of social media.
No, he, but you know what? I have more respect for Chris Hansen for trying.
Yes, he definitely tries. Yes.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy, he has no money. He filed for bankruptcy. And here he is going after Onision like he is.
Yeah.
Like, and it's tremendous to see him try. And he's going to get, the more he does this, the more money he'll get. But again, like, even someone like Chris Hansen from To Catch a Predator humbled himself and came to YouTube with a very terrible video production guy.
He's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. His name is Vincent, by the way. For those of you guys that don't even know. Vincent. Yeah, dude, I love this story. I'll probably be using this story for years to come. But yeah, so Vincent just was terrible. And Chris Hansen eventually fired him, thank God. And now he's doing stuff on his own. He probably does have somebody helping him out that's definitely staying behind the scenes now, I'm sure.
I would too.
But we see, like, when I watch Chris Hansen stuff, and I'm like, man, that guy still saw value.
Totally.
And stepping down and interacting with people the way he does. He takes audience questions. Mm-hmm. He posts responses from people. He really did like lower himself out of the broadcast. And a lot of that too was because he was fired.
But you know, he didn't stop, and he didn't just spurn it and all that kind of stuff. But you see, the thing is too, like, To Catch a Predator clips on YouTube, you know, you might say, oh, that's just, you know, you shouldn't watch that. Christian shouldn't watch that kind of stuff. And the reality, and the algorithm is just all about raging against you. And I think there is a grace there when you see pedophiles getting their just desserts. And it's like, you know, I personally believe that some pedophiles would watch that stuff and be like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't feed this beast anymore. You know what I mean?
That's exactly right. And that's an issue of using social media for justice and not grace. And that itself, as you say, is a grace. And so
it's the grace of shame. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very valuable.
But Gospel Coalition doesn't have they don't have a view of grace that includes that kind of stuff typically. And you can see it in some of these articles.
Right. Right. I mean, like this article right here, it says, we'll need to understand the many ways in which today's social media platforms create conditions that may be hostile to democracy's success.
So now social media is going to end democracy. I mean, could you be more hyperbolic than this?
Well, I would hope so, because I'm against democracy. But still, like, that's it's just amazing to me that this would even be quoted. And then it says, likewise, today's social media platforms create create conditions that may be hostile to considerate Christ-like communication.
Unbelievable. Like, honestly.
Like, I'm telling you, man, like, I have had amazing conversations with people on social media. I've gotten to know you. I've never met you in real life, by the way. That's not a surprise to you.
Soon.
Yeah, soon, hopefully, for sure. You're going to the Fight Laugh Feast conference?
God willing, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll at least see you there. But, like, I've known you. I know I can have Christ-like communication with you, and I can also fight with you alongside of you on Twitter and stuff like that. So I actually would argue that the people that I know and I fight with on Twitter that are solid, good brothers, I actually have a very close relationship with them. People that are on Twitter know exactly how hostile Twitter is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my pastor, Jeff, is not on Twitter. But James White, my other pastor, is. And so I'll be explaining something to Jeff, and he just, like, doesn't, because he's not there. But one of the values, I think, of Twitter is it's shown us just how infiltrated and wicked the liberalism is within the reform community. We're not talking about just any, you know, we're not just talking about Democrats over here with the DNC that are evil. We're talking about people within our own communities that listen to the same pastors we do are very, very dangerous. And we're starting to see that.
Sometimes this communication, you know, it's like you said on Twitter, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of the fighting on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. But the thing is, like, this kind of Gospel Coalition presentation where that's just so unChristlike and so terrible, and it's going to end the world. Like, that's such a short view of things. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've had a conversation that goes like this. It's definitely more than 10 times where someone says, hey, you know, Adam, I wanted to apologize to you. And I'm like, well, why? And they're like, well, we were talking about, you know, theonomy or something once. And I said some things to you that, you know, now that I'm kind of thinking about it, they weren't right. And sometimes they've even become a theonomist or whatever it was we were about. And he says, I just want to apologize to you. And I barely remember that stuff. I never do.
That happened to me at the G3 conference, like with at least two or three people. They were like, you know, I was like really mean to you on Twitter. And I'm like, I honestly wouldn't you're not the first, and it doesn't hurt my feelings.
And sometimes I've been that guy where I've gone to this person and said, you know what? Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have said this. And I was kind of harsh with you on this. You were right. I was wrong. And it's like, dude, I don't even remember that. Mm-hmm. Actually, someone came up to me and asked me about something I said to him a couple of years ago, about him. And I, knowing what I know now, I said, hey, I wouldn't have said that at the time. And it was a beautiful moment. Like, I've never met this guy. And it was just like, thanks for telling me about it. And not just, and he said to me, you know, I would have probably held this against you if I didn't tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm very glad that you told me, you know what I mean?
Right. And so let's end with,
you know, so let me say this. I'm sorry, Marcus, this is your show, but so what does this tell you? That the manager of social media at Lifeway Christian Resources, who wrote this article that said the social media is going to destroy the world.
By the way, he was doing a great job using social media to get people in the stores.
Right. But hear me out.
Okay, go ahead.
So yes, you're right. What does it tell you that this person probably, he's not writing about that part of social media that you and I have had multiple experiences where we've got these beautiful Christian moments with people that we fought and stuff like that. What does it tell you that he doesn't even seem to know that that stuff happens? And he's the manager of social media at Lifeway Christian Resources.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I would imagine that someone in his position is mainly focused on click rates through emails. And mainly getting people to see, let's say, maybe like Facebook advertising or something like that.
Sure.
And following that up for sales, which is a completely valid use. And I've worked in that industry, and I know how, you know, I know how to manage Facebook pixels and stuff like that to get that sort of information. But when it comes to the sort of, when I'm speaking about social media now, this is my encouragement for people that are watching this. The level of production that you can do in your room right now through live streaming, whether it's on Twitch or live streaming to Facebook, for less than $500, the amount of production that you can do is unimaginable. Just five years ago, and the Gospel Coalition didn't see it coming, and they've missed the boat. In fact, they—I don't know if you know this—they just hired a director of podcasts for the Gospel Coalition. I was looking.
Did you apply?
I was asked to apply, but I figured. I would do it with utmost creative control, and I don't think I would ever get utmost creative control.
Of course not.
But I just thought it was interesting. It's 2020, and you guys are just now realizing maybe we should have a person to manage our podcast and really like do that in a serious way, and not just the way that they've been doing it, which is just recording talks and stuff like that. They're going to get into more storytelling and stuff like that, like more NPR style. I know this because I looked on LinkedIn and found out who they hired and was trying to figure out sort of, not because I'm a stalker, but because I like to figure out the direction organizations are going with their media. And so I like to be on top of things and make sure that I'm ahead of the game in terms of what I'm doing. So that's why. So I know they're going to go more NPR style storytelling podcast, which honestly I think is great, because those are the kind of podcasts that I listen to. But it's like, wow, it's 2020 and you guys are just now thinking you guys should be doing this. But I don't think you're going to see Russell Moore do a live stream with an Elgato Stream Deck set up where he can change camera angles from, you know, his desktop. Like, you're not going to see that happen.
And so this is my whole point, and this is why I bring this up, because their Gospel Coalition has missed the boat, and they're still missing it to the point where they've got a guy who, you're right, Marcus, his position is a completely legitimate position at Lifeway. We need people to look at the metrics and look at the numbers and the click-through rates and all that stuff, mm-hmm. as far as driving
Absolutely.
Sales. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. But that actually doesn't qualify him to write this article about how you need to use social media in a Christ-like way. It's right. not connected. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
And so they're having this dude with a nice social media title, again, yeah. totally legitimate, yeah. write an article that misses the boat again,
yeah.
because this is disconnected from everyone who uses social media yeah. in from our perspective.
Yeah, especially Lifeway's social media.
This is my point. They're not in the same universe as we are.
That's a brilliant observation. I didn't even think that through in terms of like what the Lifeway social media is used for
right.
versus what he's saying. Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
And so, it's like, I see the strategy. I see what they're not doing well with social media the way normies use it. They're not doing well. And so let's bring in the expert to have him write an article about how to use it in a Christ-like way. And his advice is to take a picture of something beautiful and share it online, which people already do. And it's great. I love looking at pictures like that. But this is not a winning strategy
right.
for what normies use it for.
Right, right. And then, if you look at this, if I pull it up, it says right here, it says, the social media landscape changed dramatically in 2009 with two major additions, Facebook algorithms and Twitter's retweet button. It's just like the way they talk about this stuff is like the ability for people to be able to share stuff and like for anybody to go viral is very dangerous.
Right.
And it's something that we just can't have. And I don't think there's a winning strategy for these organizations who want to keep control, like someone like the Gospel. I mean, look, first off, let's just say the Gospel Coalition doesn't know how to use social media, first and foremost, because they block so quickly. I've said some pretty hostile things against the Gospel Coalition, but I was blocked years ago. Before I even thought the Gospel Coalition was even like on the verge of like being bad, I made some like sarcastic joke, satirical joke about a gospel. I was like looking forward to the Gospel Coalition article about this. This was years ago, like, because you know they have these cliche gospel articles.
Of course,
like, yeah, of course. And of I just course. Made a joke about it, and then I realized I was blocked, and I was like, okay. So like they're so thin-skinned, they don't even have what it takes to really make it in this industry. So here's my question for you, AD.
Okay.
You're put in charge of the Gospel Coalition, social media, video production, all that, the creative, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think the guy's name is that's doing it now is Morales. You're put in charge of that now. They've come to light. They give you complete creative control. And even just for the sake of argument, everybody is not a liberal. And they've abandoned credit, all that stuff. So let's take the theology out of it. You can do their social media. What's the first thing you do?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I do is I start a show called Internet Blood Sports. And what it is? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. You know, to be honest, there needs to be a little bit more controversy. I think I'm actually kind of not joking about the internet blood sports thing because, you know, I'm not saying that we need drama for drama's sake, but there needs to be some demonstrations of how to have disagreements, how to fight, essentially, in a way that is entertaining, that is direct, but still, you know, we Christians have rules that we play by. We're not going to lie about people. We're not going to call people, you know, I don't know what you're not going to call them, but you know what I mean? Like there needs to be a little more controversy because to be perfectly honest, the things that the Gospel Coalition writes about, they're just so irrelevant for everyday people. And everyday people do need to have a way to sort of be a Christian in the midst of controversy.
Gospel Coalition's target audience?
Well, I've heard on good authority that it's like basically middle-aged women.
Okay.
So that we'd have to switch that right away.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting because I would say I would have thought that it would have been maybe seminary men.
So I don't know that this is true, but I remember there was a guy, oh my goodness, I don't remember, but he had connections in the publishing industry and like these Gospel Center, like blogging.
Yeah.
And they write books with the female demographic in mind, typically. That's what he said. I don't know if it's true. But I don't think that if it is seminary men that they're targeting, they're going to need to shift that a little bit.
Yeah. So here's what I would do, and it actually it's kind of similar to what you would do, is one of the things I would do is I would create these sort of shows where you see people disagreeing. Russell Moore, for example, right?
Yeah.
You see him having to actually step into something where he's going to be met with people that disagree with him, even if it's like a town hall. Or something mm-hmm. like that, right? And then you put these guys in these situations that forces them to show some sort of authenticity. I remember years ago, we asked for Russell Moore to be on the show. He had a new book called, was it Culture Making or something like that? He had some book.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Culture Making, Xander Crouch. But the book that he had, I thought was really interesting. And I was like, well, let's see if we can just get him on the show. And then maybe Jeff can ask him a few hardball questions or whatever. And that'll be fun. Because I didn't think, like, at the time, I didn't think from what I was reading about the book, it didn't seem too terrible. But because he's doing a book tour, I thought that he'd be interested in maybe doing some media. So I reached out and I got an email back. And I'll never forget it. It was like, would you be willing to send the questions in advance?
Mm-hmm.
And we're mm-hmm. like, no. No, like what? Like the fact that somebody would ask for the questions in advance for an unscripted TV show or unscripted interview, it was just really strange and weird to me. And, you know, thankfully to Jeff's credit, you know, he was like, you know, I just don't want to bind my conscience to a contract that says I have to ask certain questions and I can't rebut if I don't like an answer. Like he's like, I wouldn't do that for anybody. You know, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't do that for anybody. Even if I got like an abortion doctor on the program, I wouldn't restrain myself just to, because I wanted to get someone on the show. Like, I wouldn't do that for the president, you know? So we never had him on. And that's the sort of thing that I would do, is I would place these people in positions that force them to be authentic and act as if they really cared about people who didn't have a college degree or that, you know, didn't have. I don't know if you saw the video I tweeted yesterday about how do people in power serve others.
I didn't see that. No.
It's with Russell Moore and Micah Edmondson.
Micah, I saw that on the bar of the Gospel Coalition. I didn't read it yet.
But it's just a video. It's a very poorly done video. And I made some comments about the production. And the reason I did that, I just want to say this. The reason I'll take a Gospel Coalition video and I'll critique it artistically and aesthetically is because they always make a big deal about how anybody can just become somebody on YouTube or Facebook, and that's a real concern to them. And I personally actually don't believe that. I think it takes a lot of work and effort to do what you do, AD, or you know, the stuff that I've done. I've had years of experience doing this stuff. So I don't think that just anybody can just get and build a platform for themselves. In fact, if you look at most of the giants on YouTube, they were making videos for years and years before they started to get their first big hit. Right. Yep. So I don't believe that. But when I see someone that is absolutely failing, like the Gospel Coalition, where their YouTube views, we can actually pull that up. That actually might be interesting to see, because I feel like there is a lot more going on with their hatred for social media. I think it's one because they just haven't grasped it. So if you look, for example, their most popular video in 5 years, first off, they have I thought I pulled it up. So they have 78,000 subscribers right there, which is not a lot. In terms of their reach, the reach that the Gospel Coalition has is massive. And so for the Gospel Coalition to have only 78,000 subscribers when their reach is so huge, that's concerning to me. Especially when you look at someone like Apologia, who doesn't really have a large reach, who has 200,000 subscribers. Right. And growing like that. So I think like there's a concern here that needs to be addressed. But also, if you look at like their most popular video, only has 459,000 views. And then the videos that they post regularly, it hasn't even broken 1,000. And
it's pretty sad.
And I just want to be clear that I'm not pointing this out to be like, oh, look at us. Like, we're way more popular than them. What I'm saying is they're critiquing a platform that they don't know how to use. And instead of saying, look, guys, we just don't get the social media landscape. We don't know how to make content that's relevant for the reform community. And you guys at CrossPolitik and Apologia, like, you guys are really doing it. And we're going to imitate you. Instead of imitating us or trying to learn from us, they're attacking us.
That's why I say it's a losing play. It's very sad to see someone say, okay, I've got, you know, 70,000 followers or 78,000 subscribers. I posted a video today that has 531 views with Russell Moore, who has true name recognition. AD Robles has 3,000 subscribers. He posted a video today that has 500 views. And I'm not saying that I'm awesome. That's only 500 views. It's the same 500 views. So they see that and they're like, why does he have such engagement when I can't get it? And so instead of figuring out that, they say, well, it's got to be un-Christ-like communication and it's going to destroy democracy. And furthermore, you just post pictures of beautiful puppies or something. it's just a really sad place to be, where you're like so you're so confused about it that you try to rig the rules to try to, you know, undermine the credibility of people that are doing it and say, well, there must be sinning in some way.
Right, right.
You know, it's pretty bizarre.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. I just wanted to look at just something.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to see that. And you know, one of the when you were talking about your idea of what you would do, that would be awesome to see some of that in an unscripted way. You know, and it doesn't mean that we don't like polished people. I happen to like how some of these guys communicate in a polished way, but it would be awesome to see them squirm a little bit. And I don't mean like attacking them, but being exposed to people that have direct questions and being asked direct questions that they can't wiggle out of. I'd love to see that kind of stuff. That would be awesome. Or even just a live stream, like we were talking about Chris Hansen, even if he's fumbling around, you know, and trying to figure this out, it would be awesome if they just took some questions and you know, they've done this from time to time, but obviously they haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah. I'm just looking at their subscriber count. It's actually very weird.
Don't tell me they're buying subscribers, please. Don't tell me that.
Well, I don't want to say that. but I'll just point out that
don't say it.
It's just very interesting that every single day they get exactly 100 subscribers. Every single day. I've never seen that before. That's just, I'm not going to say they're buying subscribers, but that's such a specific,
that's pretty such weird.
A specific number every day. Wow. I wasn't planning to pull that up. I was like, well, that's really, because I was seeing if they had any subscriber losses. I was looking to see, like, for example, like right here, you know, like what did they do there? When was the MLK thing?
That was probably almost exactly 2 years ago, a little over, I think.
Okay, so that was,
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting what they did that day. But I mean, you see, like they've kind of remained sort of stagnant over the course of 3 years. They haven't really had any substantial like peaks or valleys other than whatever this was.
And it must be very frustrating. I mean, listen, they put out a lot of content and they've got a lot of subscribers. So it must be so frustrating to put this content out, to put so much effort in. I don't know what their budget is, but it's probably pretty big. And to see, you know, 500, 700 views, 1,000 views, maybe, like, it must be very frustrating to then look at yokels like you make $250 on a live stream. Whatever it was, they must not like that. I mean, you don't even have a theological degree, Marcus.
Right. You know what's interesting about that is ever since that happened, which by the way was just a fluke. It's not something I'm like.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, look how awesome I am. It was just a fluke. But what was interesting about that is ever since that's happened, I've gotten so much heat on Twitter from people that have been attacking me very harshly ever since that moment, because I guess they felt like there's sort of a danger there.
Sure.
And so that's sort of that was just very, very interesting that people saw that one fluke was allowed me to be a threat. So I just thought that was weird. But yeah, man, so that's pretty much it. That's what I had. Did you have anything else?
No, man, I just want to say that, I'm hoping to really get to the point where if anyone searches a Gospel Coalition video that you see my stupid bald head face on that search bar. I'm hoping to do that. And I don't know if I'm able, I don't know if I'm going to be capable of doing that kind of stuff, and it's okay. Listen, at the end of the day, if Gospel Coalition were to turn things around and not be so liberal and figure out social media, I'd be fine with it. I don't like hate them just automatically.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of sad to do this kind of a strategy where you're losing, so you try to rig the rules. It's just kind of sad.
Yeah. Just for clarification, I'm just going back and doing some double checking. It does look like the website I used rounds the number up. So it wasn't, they're not buying subscribers. so just for clarification.
Confirmed.
They're not buying subscribers. They just have, they do have very little subscriber gain though. For a platform, that's as large as they are. And you know, like I say this too, like I just want to be very clear. I feel like an organization like the Gospel Coalition could be a massive service.
Totally.
For people that, you know, like we need a voice within the conservative Christian community that says, hey, we don't want YouTube demonetizing words like Christianity or demonetizing words that have the gospel in it. Like our channel is going to be demonetized because we're the Gospel Coalition. You would expect that they would speak up about that and you know what I mean?
I think they
should have conferences which teach people, hey, here's how you live stream and talk about theology and politics, and like they could be a massive help and service.
Totally.
But instead they're stuck in this age of, you know, this is what we call, you know, they're the cathedral.
Yeah.
As Michael Malice calls it, they're the cathedral, and they are dictating knowledge and information to us that they want us to know about. But the problem is what we're seeing now is another reinvention of the printing press. Broadcast power, like not just printing power now, like broadcast power. And so instead of them embracing this and saying, okay, we're going to go headlong into live streaming. We're like, Gospel Coalition is not going to accept super chats. We're going to read super chat. Like we're just going to embrace it and dive in. We're going to live stream playing Bible Adventures on NES. I don't know. They can keep it on brand. They can figure it out. But that's
a good idea. I actually own that game.
You should do that, man. Dude,
that's live a good stream. Idea. That is a terrible game, but I would love to do that.
Yeah, it's awesome. all I'm saying is there are ways they can figure out how to do live streaming on brand. But in order for them to do that, I think they would automatically have to come off brand and actually interact with people and commoners. And they would have to know what sort of content people like. Like I can look at their YouTube chats, their YouTube stats. I can look at their YouTube stats and know right away, you know, these videos aren't working for people. These are videos people relate to. But we don't sort of see that with whoever they have running their YouTube and social media. Probably either isn't allowed to innovate or doesn't care to innovate. My assumption would be that there's a lot of bureaucracy at the Gospel Coalition,
totally,
which makes it impossible to have creative control. And that's a shame because they have, as artists, like I would love to see the Gospel Coalition just making amazing content, that obviously was theologically correct. So,
well, thanks for having me on, man. This is fun.
Dude, man, I appreciate you being here. You really are an inspiration to me. I've had a great time. And you can feel free to log off anytime if you want. And I might just hang around and talk to the super chats or talk to the chat like I normally do. But
yeah, absolutely. I'll probably log off now. It's a little late over here, and I got to get to bed. So good night, guys. God bless.
See you, dude.